Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moorish Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and today we're dealing with the family. Family is business, and business is family. And what we're going to do today is get some information out of there, and so we can deal with some cohesiveness in our family structures across the United States. We're going to be dealing with the following questions: how important is family and business? What has happened to the so-called black family in the United States? Does government assistance build up families? What is the solution to saving the family? What part does business play in the family? And much, much more we're going to discuss here this evening. Now, we have to understand that the basic unit of society is the family. Okay, but before we get down into this, let me mention that for those of you who are new, we're offering this evening free articles, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game, How to Play, and Secrets of America. Send me an email. Just say, Tahaka, send me those free articles that you mentioned. Send that to Tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's Tahaka. 53@hotmail.com, and we'll rush that right to you. Also, as far as your nationality is concerned, everybody in the United States and around the world has a nationality, except people, a large portion of people inside the United States of African descent. And we have to understand the importance of having a nationality and to way to register with your government in regards to your nationality, is to go to www.moorishamericangov.org. That's moorishamericangov.org, and register with your government right there. It'll cost you a dime. Put all your family members on there, their names on there. Fill out the little registration form, and you place your name and family and all the family members that you can think of on that roster right there at MoorishAmericanGov.org. Now, I'd like to commend the brothers and sisters who have accessed the archives. You're doing a tremendous work, and I congratulate you on the successes that you're having with the courts and dealing with your bill collectors and mortgage companies and so on and so forth. For those of you who are new, the way to access the most powerful library in the United States and is really a power base to have inside your home. You go to TahakaArchives.org. That's TahakaArchives, ArchiVes.org. And access those archives when you do contact me. If you got a problem with your loved ones in jail, or if you're having a problem with the traffic, tickets, law firms, mortgage companies, banks, you name it, the solutions are there. And we're going to put this information up in the chat room so that you can access it. and then you're ready to go. We're going to be coming out with some new stuff here after a while, and you'll be able to access that right straight at Tahaka's Archives, and dealing with your credit, dealing with your mortgage, dealing with your taxes, the Internal Revenue Service, all of that will be listed right there at Tahaka's Archives. You'll be able to access it right at that site, okay? Now, let me state some things here at the outset. A lot of us don't know that when it comes to business, the first place that should start is in your own home, among your own family. If we understand the equation that each person is given talents, given that at birth, and I look back at what my grandfather told me. He said, the only reason a man should work for another man is to get seed capital for investment in your own company. And when we look at that and we think about the people in our home, our children, mama, daddy, if you are employed and you get up in the morning and everybody's rushing, you're rushing to get the kids off to school, father's got to get up, he's got to rush out to go to his job, and mama's got to hurry up and get the children in school, then she got to rush out and go to her job. Well, what if you decided, wait a minute, something is wrong here. We're going to have to create something that belongs to us. We're going to have to build something that we can call our own. We already got a power base right there in the house. If you got a mother, father, and two children, or three, or four, or whatever, all that's human energy. And if you channel that energy in the right direction, you can be quite successful. And there are people all over the United States that have done this. You got to come up with an idea, and you say, well, okay, you handle the paperwork, I'll handle the marketing, and the kids can handle this, that, and the other inside the business structure. But the revenue that's generated from this particular operation benefits who? It benefits the family unit, you see. Instead of running out on these jobs and stuff and making everybody else rich, why don't you consider something that everybody in the household can agree on that you can do, and everybody set out to do it, and everybody participate in it, and everybody benefit from it, you see, because you'll discover that people are more apt to work in something when they know that they have stake in what they're working in. This is something that the United States found out when they went over in Japan. They couldn't figure out how the Japanese were working, but when it was time for the employees to go home, nobody wanted to leave. Everybody just kept right on working and working on up and through the night, and they couldn't figure out why are these people refusing to go home, and you know why they're willing to continue to work. And the managers of the corporations explained to them, what we have done is we've taken these jobs and we have allowed the employees to have part ownership in the company. So when they work 8 hours for us, any remaining time that they decide to work, they are now officially working for themselves. And the income that they're generating, a percentage of the money goes to them. Because a person will work 10 times harder for himself than for another person. At least that's the way it's supposed to be. You go to work, you work 8 hours a day on a job. Well, when you get off that job, it is now officially your time. You are officially on your time. And what you do with your time will determine what your life can be like. And if you got a household of people and everybody's on the same page, and it comes time to eat dinner, it's officially time to sit down after dinner or during dinner to discuss your financial investments and your financial future. If you're going to get insurance and all this stuff, now's the time to talk about it. What we plan for the future, everybody needs to participate. Even the smallest kids, they need to feel like, hey, I'm a part of this thing too. I'm going to profit from this thing too. And you'll discover that everybody feels good about everybody because everybody feels connected to something. Everybody can see something in the future long before the future ever arrives. So family and business is family. And when we look at it that way, and I mean, there are many, many examples of this all around. Now, we're going to look at a family thing here. And keep in mind, it's the same family structure, but now this particular family that we're going to look at, we don't want to imitate this type of business, however, but the reason I want to you look at this is because it involves family, you see. Family is the key. If you're going to have a company, if you're going to work for a company, you should be working for your own company, your own family company. And everybody in that family should be benefiting from that family business. Okay? All right, now we're going to look at the first thing we're going to look at is what type of family not to have. Okay? And I'm talking to people of African descent. This is the kind of family that we don't want to have.
I already discovered the procession of the equinox. The procession of the equinox, you can look this up, answers.com. Answers.com is a really good resource.
All right. Wrong one. Here we go.
Good evening. It's a killing that's shaken Montreal's underworld. A man known as the godfather of the city's mafia is dead.
86-year-old Nicola Rizzuto was murdered in his Cartierville home in North End last night. Stéphane Giroux has more on the death and its possible consequences.
The shot came from this wooded area shortly before 6. A bullet pierced the solarium, then the patio door. It hit Nicolo Rizzuto as he prepared dinner with his wife and daughter. He was rushed to hospital and was later pronounced dead. His wife and daughter were treated for shock. Police and media soon closed down Antoine Berthollet Street in Cartierville, where several mobsters live. Many friends and relatives came to support the patriarch's family, but they remained silent. At age 86, Nicolo Rizzuto had become a sort of local celebrity, with his old fedora and constant smile for the media. He was born in a house behind this church in Cattolica Eraclea in Sicily, and immigrated to Montreal with his wife and children in 1954. He quickly climbed the organized crime ladder in the 1970s. The Rizzutos moved to Venezuela and built a drug empire which supplied cocaine and heroin to North America. But in 1978, the Montreal leader, Paolo Violi, was shot dead. The Rizzutos moved back to Montreal, and the patriarch would pass on the reins to his son, Vito, with the blessing of the five New York crime families. The Rizzutos would reign for 3 decades. But in 2004, the FBI had Vito arrested and deported to the United States for his role in a mob hit in New York in 1981. Nicolo would come out of retirement to take over his son's business. His headquarters was the Café Consenza in St. Leonard. Hidden microphones and cameras from police would catch the godfather stuffing stacks of money in his pockets and socks. A police crackdown in 2006 led to massive arrests. It also marked the explosion of a power struggle to take over the mob. Family members were killed or kidnapped, never to be seen again. Other mobsters began living in fear. Yesterday's murder pretty much sealed the fate of the 30-year reign of the Rizzuto clan.
He was the last one alive. In Montreal, there is no war. the victims are all on one side.
What puzzles police is the way Rizzuto was killed, which goes against the so-called code of honor.
They did it inside his house and in front of family. Normally they have the code of honors that they will do those kind of crimes without involving the family's members.
But mob experts suspect the old traditions of honor and respect no longer matter in the mafia.
For them to kill someone that old is sending a very potent message to everyone in that family that they're finished.
If it is an internal power struggle, the new emerging faces aren't known yet.
We've had three, four members of the Rizzuto clan gunned down or put away, and we don't know by whom. We don't even have a name. We don't even have a suspect. We don't know who the rising power is. So it is very opaque. And I think it's going to take a little while for us to begin to figure out who is the new name in the mafia in Canada.
So given that, Steph, where does the police investigation go from here?
Well, investigating the murder will not be easy. As you know, the mafia isn't exactly keen on cooperating with police. They usually like to settle their scores in a much different way. Now, there are plenty of video cameras around the Rizzuto home. I saw them myself. Whether the family will agree to turn over the tapes to the police is quite another matter. That's why they're asking for the public's participation. But what police are more interested in right now is, just like Julian said a few minutes ago, is who are the new leaders? Who is so ambitious and so powerful to have the courage to actually go out and wipe out an entire clan that's been dominating the Montreal mafia scene for so long without the permission from the New York gang? That is the main concern by police, because so far no names are emerging other than the theory that these are younger members of the mafia eager to make their mark, but who might be tired of waiting for the old guard to move on.
Okay, thank you very much, Steph. Stephane Giroux on the latest in the murder of Nick Rizzuto.
So is this the end of the Rizzuto crime family in Montreal? They have suffered a series of blows. Niccolo, or Nick Rizzuto, as he was known as, was the don of the family. He became the boss in 1978 after the murder of mafia leader Paolo Violi. Then Nick's son Vito took over the reins in the 1990s. Vito Rizzuto, currently in jail in Colorado, scheduled to be released in 2012. Agostino Contrera was a top lieutenant in the family. He was murdered along with his bodyguard last summer. And then there's Paolo Renda, another top member of the Rizzuto clan. He was kidnapped and has been missing since last May. Finally, Nick Rizzuto Jr., the son of Vito, grandson of Niccolo. He was never convicted of any crime related to the family. He was murdered in NDG in December of 2009.
Hi, I'm Mark Kelly, and welcome to the show. Well, it's made the news all over the world, from the U.S. to Australia, from India to Italy, because even though Niccolo Rizzuto lived in Montreal, he was the alleged godfather of one of North America's most storied mob families. And as he sat and dined in his own living room, his wife and daughter nearby, reports suggest a single bullet pierced two windows and killed him. In the language of the Italian mafia, to be whacked in your own home in front of your own family is more than a murder. It's an insult. For the Rizzuto clan, it could also be a fatal blow. The rise of the Rizzuto clan began with a funeral. After top mobster Paolo Violi took a shotgun blast to the head in 1978, Niccolo Rizzuto Sr. became the godfather of the Montreal underworld. But after decades of dominance, fortune turned against the family.
Best lawyer in the country over here.
In 2003, Rizzuto's son Vito was implicated in a triple murder in Brooklyn. Now he's serving time in the U.S. for racketeering. A 2006 police sweep nabbed 90 mob suspects, many linked to the Rizzuto clan. In December 2009, Nick Rizzuto, the godfather's grandson, was gunned down in broad daylight.
And he got shot with touch at least once to the upper body, and he fell on the sidewalk.
This murder will have the impact of a tsunami.
In May, the family's second-in-command, Paolo Renda, vanished. His car left unlocked, keys in the ignition on the roadside.
We strongly believe at this point that it could be a kidnapping.
In June, another Rizzuto higher-up, Agostino Contrera, was murdered in front of an East End Montreal warehouse. Now the godfather himself dead. Will the Rizzuto reign end the way it began, with a funeral? Well, Julian Scherer is an investigative journalist who's covered organized crime in Montreal for years. He joins me now. Julian, good to see you as always. And tell me about Niccolo Rizzuto. I'm interested in this because You've got an 86-year-old man that looks more like a grandfather than a mobster that some people said was out of the crime business. Why was he a target?
He was a target because of who of what he symbolized. He was a grandfather. He was out of the crime business. This is a man at a young age. He sees his own father assassinated in a gangland hit. Then he lives to see his grandson killed, as you just showed. His son sent away to prison. He had already relinquished the reins of power, and this was clearly symbolic. This is literally cutting off the head of a powerful clan family and basically saying you are not untouchable.
Who would do this, Julian? I mean, I know that I've been reading all kinds of theories that are out there, but it's a pretty brazen attack, and one could only surmise that it's related to the killing of his grandson months ago. So what's the talk in Montreal tonight?
Well, you know, it's 99.9% of mafia killings are done by the mafia. And in this case, when you have a whole slew of family members and friends and associates who have been knocked off, this is house cleaning the way the mafia does it. You got to keep in mind, this is about business. This is about millions and millions of dollars, control over the cocaine trade, of the extortion racket. Only in the mafia, in the organized crime in Canada, you don't do it with a hostile takeover or, you know, with stock options. You do it at the end of a gun. That's how the Rizzutos took over 20, 30 years ago, and now it's coming back to haunt them.
You know, Julian, I've been online looking at this story. A lot of people are saying, this is great news, you know, bad guys killing bad guys, it saves time for the police. But the reality is it does create a power vacuum in a city where there's a lot of money on the line because they're involved in criminal organizations. So what happens now with a vacuum like this that's being created?
Well, you know, Montreal is used to gang wars, but we kind of always had a players list. You know, you could kind of see who's on top, who's losing. You could keep score. So when the Hells Angels were fighting the Rockers, even when the Rizzutos were taking on the Catrones and Paolo Violi, right now it's a big mystery because there are no names circulating. Somebody is going to take over. You know, when Niccolo Rizzuto was worried about his own life 20 years ago when he was trying to fight for control of the mafia, he leaves Canada and hides out in Venezuela, sets up a little cafe, and he calls it The Godfather. That's the name he gives to his restaurant. The question now, of course, is who is going to be the new Godfather in Canada? And there will be one. You know, there was a scene in one of the books I did where his son Vito, who's now in prison in Colorado, was meeting with the Hells Angels, literally sitting around the table to set the price of cocaine in the streets of Montreal. They set it at $50,000 a kilo back in 2000. And the police estimated, because of their informant there, that we're talking $12 million a week. That's back in 2000. So there's a lot at stake here about who is going to take over the reins of power.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Julian, thanks for talking to us tonight.
Good to talk to you, Mark.
Well, in preparing tonight's show, we actually spoke to several former mobsters who now live in the U.S. About this murder, and each were shocked that this happened this brazenly to a Rizzuto, especially the patriarch of the family. You know, if this were a story about a street gang member, it might not make the news, but there's something about mobsters that makes them compelling, and over the past 100 years, when it comes to wise guys, it seems we just can't get enough.
This desperate public enemy now rises to fame as an underworld hero.
So how does everyone know the name John Dillinger? Because the Depression-era media served up dish after dish of his daring exploits, and the public ate it up.
Public enemy number one.
Al Capone? Forget about it. The man is a legend, and when a rumored vault of his was found and excavated in 1986, the world wondered what was inside.
My instinct is telling me that there's money.
If I'd have went to jail, know I was gone, I'd have stashed some money.
Geraldo made it into a national TV special.
What secrets lie hidden inside Al Capone's vault? Find out when we open it on live television.
Okay, so the vault was empty, but it didn't dull the public's fascination from the Godfather.
Both commanded the most powerful and merciless crime organization in the world.
The Goodfellas.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
From The Sopranos.
Your boys were warned to run my crew my way.
To Boardwalk Empire. People continue to buy into the myth of the wise guy, a macho fantasy of playing by your own rules. But is that what life in a crime family is really like? Well, in the case of the Rizzuto family, the life of a mobster looks far from glamorous right now. The clan is quickly becoming an endangered species, but not quite extinct. As we mentioned, Vito Rizzuto, Nicolo Rizzuto's son, is still alive and still behind bars in Colorado, serving a 10-year sentence in the U.S. And when he gets out, he may be interested in just surviving or maybe settling some scores. Either way, that day will come in 2012.
Okay. We just looked at certain types of families. But once again, the word family spreads throughout the entire situation of the mob. We have the Gambino family in New York, and they're in charge of the garment district, and all the family members participate in the family business. Now, what we have here among a lot of people in the United States, they have not understood or they have lost sight of family. We have mother, she's working on a job as a secretary, and we got dad, he's out, he's doing construction work. We got son, he's working over at McDonald's. Then we got the daughter, she's working down the street at Wendy's. And everybody's going in all these different directions, but then when hard times hit, everything is scattered. There's no cohesiveness. There is no structure. There is no real major success. It's like we're going round and round and round and round in circles, but as a family unit, there is no glue. There is no cohesiveness because we have not understood family, the structure of family, the success of family. You're going to invest, you invest in the family, and then you can expand into extended family structure where you get other people that's not in the immediate family to participate in the family business and become a part of the family business. So your family is expanding. To give you an example of families that have grown large, let's look at the family called Japan, China, Korea, Africa, you name it. Families that started out with a family and grew and grew and grew and expanded the family and expanded the family interest. These all have the family name. They have the family territory. The same thing goes all the way across the board. So when we start looking at situations from a whole different perspective and from a family perspective, we get a chance to invest in the family, create revenue and income and protection and a shield for the family. We will get a chance, if we're successful enough, to spend more time with the family. Because when the children come along, they need the nurturing of both parents to have balance. So when you have, you've eliminated the money problem, and now you're able to spend more time with your family because your family is right there with you. You all generating your own income because you're in your own family business. No one has to go anywhere. I mean, you don't have to put your children in the care of someone else because the children are working right alongside you because you're teaching them how to become family oriented. In the family structure, which can later become a family empire. You don't have to participate in any criminal activity. As a matter of fact, I'm definitely recommending that you don't, because there's something fundamentally wrong with that. For those of you who are on your social sites, I need you to send me your friend request. If you're on Facebook, you on LinkedIn, you on Twitter, wherever you are, send a friend request to Tahaka Amana L. Bay And I'll grant that free request. That'll give you access to my wall, okay? Right there on Facebook. Now we're going to take another look.
No, dude, we want to just carry the torch and we make them happy. They always show support, so. Blessings, if you will. You know, Uncle Ivory, one of the biggest blessings was having Uncle Ivory at the premiere of our new show. And, you know, he was there, he sat right behind me. And at the end of the pilot, you know, you could feel the hand on the shoulder. And that's all I need, you know, for me, is just that blessing of, all right.
Yeah. With their show, I had to learn, even though, you know, as a producer, I had to learn, let them do them. And I'm not trying to make your show my show.
Well,
do y'all.
Me and Marlon nearly had a zillion fights during this process.
But
we created the show. We were writers. You know, we're invested. We're EPs on the show. And I would always call Uncle Keenan because Uncle Keenan would be the voice of reason. He would be the, okay, this is what you got to do. This is how you interact with Marlon. And literally we sat down and we sat here in this house.
Right where you were sitting.
But we sat in this house and we looked at each other and I was just like, I love you, man. He was like, I love you. And it was one of them things of what are we even talking about? You know,
what they had to learn was, even in business, you have to be family, right? So,
oh my God, so many people don't know that. You need to say that louder because people
get
that.
When you're even in business, you still got to be family, and everybody wants to be a great negotiator, and everybody wants to get the best deal. It don't always work like that in family. Sometimes you got to be a little more generous, you know. Take a little less for yourself and make sure that everybody's happy, because if you don't, it's not a coworker. That's your blood. That's your cousin or your brother or whatever, you know, because at the end of the day, like I said, it's about the experience. It's never about money or, you know, the ratings. None of that. It's about the experience that you have. And if you don't have a loving experience, especially with your people, then, you know, what are you doing? But the funny thing is the three of them, the idea of the three of them working together, they've been fighting since they were babies. It was like, that was their dynamic. They, you know, it's like they're all close in age, and they've been wrestling with each other. So it's like, now y'all want to sit down
and do a show together.
Do a show together. So they took a little mediation, and they need to learn how to
communicate. But then you're on your own show.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah, he stayed out.
He doesn't play
with the project. He's on a show with some white folks.
I hear about these kids.
Happy ending. Oprah. Happy ending.
Oprah. When I'm with my white people, I hear so many things. That's what I call Keenan, like Uncle Keenan.
We're back. Now, we just finished listening to the Wayans family. And, of course, we know how successful these guys were on television and stuff. But they are talking about the importance of family.
Okay. Just what is Tahaka's Archive? Tahaka Archives is a collection of some of the most beneficial information in the country. And the way we do this is we put this in your possession and we walk you through getting the job done. Whatever it is that you're dealing with. If you're dealing with your kids in education, if you're dealing with mortgage companies, if you're dealing with bankers, if you're dealing with your light and water company, credit card companies, regardless of what it is, that is the way this thing is designed, because everybody in this country, especially people of African descent, need a power base inside your home. So to access Tahaka's Archives, you simply go to www.tahakaarchives.org and contact me after you get through with that. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and we get you in there. That's tahakaarchives.org. Okay? That's what it's all about. Thank you.
Okay. Now, what we have to look at also, in a lot of cases, in a lot of families, we run into the situation where one family member say, well, you know, I belong to this church over here. We even got husband and wives, the husband attend one church and the wife attend a different church. It is amazing how we try to strive to make it inside this country, but we fail to look at the first person that we should try to make it with is people right there in the privacy of our own home. We have to take the time to talk to one another. We have to take the time to get to know more about what's going on in each other's head. How do we see the future? What do we? How would you like to participate in a family business? Let's lay this thing out. Let's write it down on paper, and let's figure out how everybody can benefit and how we can come together right there in our own home first before we go off out into the world to do something else or to try to get find ourselves in position making everybody else rich and doing absolutely nothing for ourselves and then trying to figure out by some hook or crook how we're going to make it. In a lot of cases, we have families that don't ever come together. And unless there's a family reunion or there's a funeral or something like that, we got to stop that kind of thing. We got to start communicating with each other on a regular basis and started thinking and talking to each other and coming together in regular scheduled meetings for successful ventures and creating a bigger and better and more cohesive bond between one another in a family setting. We're going to have to start doing that. Now, we're going to look at some of the reasons why and how this separatism has come about and the destruction of the family inside the United States. And the first thing I want to look at is some of the government social programs and stuff, and to see how this thing has done in regards to people of African descent. So you all sit tight. We're going to take a look at this, and we'll be right back, okay?
Hey, you guys, it's Kimikiana coming at you today, and I'm coming at you because Daddy was telling me about it, and we were discussing briefly something that Florida is going to, they're trying to implement. It's Florida, Kentucky, and Missouri, he said. And what they're doing is they will become one of the first states, if it passes, that will require drug tests if you are applying for any governmental aid, such as food stamps, welfare, monthly checks, or what have you. Now, of course, there's a lot of people that's going to have different opinions on this, and I wanted to give my opinion on it. A lot of people are saying it's unconstitutional. A lot of people are saying, well, if you can afford to get high, then you can use that money towards actually supplying your own needs and not relying or needing assistance from the government. Now, as far as how I think about it, now, in my circle, I'm talking about directly, in my circle, I know a lot of people that, you know, find funds for all these other things, but when it concerns doing something with their children or doing an event with their children or when it concerns being able to pay a bill, then that's when all of a sudden they cry broke or they don't have the means or, you know, I don't have money for that. But then next week, you know, they doing it up with getting high and and smoking weed and smoking exotic weed and doing it big, as they say, and all those kinds of things. And it makes you wonder, if we could just focus our energy on being productive, if we can focus our funds on being productive, then you won't necessarily need as much help as you may think that you need. Now, do I think that it's within the state's rights to ask for, okay, well, if you need, you know, food stamps, then, yeah, we're going to drug test you. I don't see a problem with it. But then again, I don't get high. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't do those things. So I think that the people that really would find a big, huge issue with that requirement is people that do those things. We all need help at times. You may need help with, you know, paying your rent. The next person may need help with keeping their lights on. The next person may wait in line for food stamps and need help with paying for the food for their entire family. That's not the issue. I was in a homeless shelter just 4 years ago. But I also was in a homeless shelter and taking advantage of my time that I spent there, laying down the foundation, recertifying my schooling and my licenses and all those kinds of things. I was using my time wisely there. And I sat there amongst a lot of women and also some men. I sat there amongst a lot of women that was focusing their energy on trying to get the men that was there, going to hotels with their baby daddy, drinking when they wasn't supposed to be drinking in order to stay there, failing, you know, drug tests and having to get kicked out of there, sneaking, you know, trying to get liquor at the liquor store down the street and all those kinds of things. I sat there and watched all of this. And I always say, like when I went back, because as you all know, I do go back and teach classes there and things like that. Well, when I went back, I always tell people, you're not getting over anybody, because if you use your time, if you don't use your time wisely there, it's going to reflect in your life. Example, it's a lot of people that I sat there and watched them doing all these kinds of things I just named off. And they wind up a year later coming back there, asking to stay there. They wind up coming back asking for their BG&E to be turned on, their lights turned on. They had to come back there, tuck their tail between their legs, and ask for assistance in some way, shape, or form. And I'm not saying that it wasn't valid reasons or if things really didn't happen. What I'm saying is that if you use your time wisely, then it will reflect in your life actively. It will show up in your life. And again, I'm not saying that people don't need help. Everybody needs help sometimes. If we are realistic and we understand that, you know, not all of us are going to be rich, not all of us have, you know, X amount of funds in the bank, not all of us have that, and including myself. But what I'm saying is that I don't see an issue if you are going to the government asking for assistance with them saying we don't mind helping people that actually help themselves as well. They're actually coming to us with valid reasons. They're going to do their part, and we're going to give them a helping hand. And while we're doing that, we want to make sure that you are doing all you need to do financially and spending the money that you do have, whether that's a little amount or a big amount, but spending that money wisely and not using it to get high and not using it to pop bottles and not using it to go out clubbing and, you know, smoking weed and all that kind of stuff. I don't see a problem with that. In fact, it probably will make a lot of people not want to go. A, not want to go and ask, or B, they're going to have to come off of the silliness. They're going to have to come off of trying to do the weed and the smoking and the drinking and the drugs and all those kinds of things and the clubbing. They're going to have to come up off of that and get real and understand responsibility and understand what they're responsible for and making it a priority, even if it's forced upon them, to be an adult. Now, a lot of people equate adulthood with being able to smoke and drink and things like that. But that also goes along with your mindset. If you can't understand that, then hey, I mean, nobody's going to be able to change your mindset, clearly. Because if you're pushing 30 and 40 and you still doing those things and that's your priority or whatever, if that's your priority, then hey, and nobody's going to change that. But I think that you're kind of forced to change it if they put that as a mandatory requirement in order for them to give you a helping hand. Now, this may be controversial, whatever. Everything that I do is controversial at times. So me breathing, me coming on, you know, with some lip gloss and some lashes is controversial at times. I don't know. But I just wanted to give my thoughts and views on it. Like I said, it's not about people needing help, because everybody needs help. Whether you're standing in a welfare line asking for food stamps for your household, for your kids, for you, sometimes even for if y'all married and asking for food stamps, I'm not saying that that's a issue or a bad thing, or I don't care, because that's not my household. That's not, you know, my mindset, and that's not what, if it's not affecting me directly, I really could care less. I just am simply, you know, it was ran across. I think it's a bill they're trying to pass or whatever. I don't know if it's passed yet, but I know that it's something that they're trying to implement in those states I named. And like I said, I think a lot of people will find an issue with this because they fall into the category where that would affect them, meaning that they, even though clearly if they're asking for help, if they're asking for food stamps, they can't feed their family, okay? Either A, they can't feed their family, or B, they're lying saying they can't feed their family to free up funds so that they can get high, or they can club, and they can pop bottles, and they can drink. You know, I know a lot of people that I see in my circle that pop bottles all the time, club all the time, but yet they can't free up funds because we want to take Pootie to Disney on Ice, and they can't free up funds to go to Disney on Ice, but they can post where they, oh, I'm popping bottles, and yeah, I'm throwing it up, and yeah, I got the exotic tonight. Those are the things that they are talking about, but yet when you ask them, you know, let's go to Port Discovery, let's go to the aquarium with our kids, they can't do that. They don't have the funds for that. They get offended because you asked, even though they know that they, you know I'm struggling, why would you ask me that? No, I don't know you struggling. I don't know you struggling because I'm only going by you was just popping bottles last night. And you wasn't drinking no cheap beer. You was popping bottles, real bottles. So I think that a lot of people, like I said, this is going to be controversial, but oh well, it is what it is. But I think a lot of people that will find issue with that bill, is people that fall into that category that they still need help, but yet they want to have their priorities on other things that would make them fail a drug test in the first place. I hope that they bring it to Maryland. I really, really do, because it will be quite interesting to see the switch. And I think that I don't see how that can make you less than a mother or less than a father by implementing that into a requirement. I don't see how that can be a negative for them asking for a drug test. You know, I saw a lot of people saying, well, you know, asking for a drug test for a job is fine, but asking for a drug test for free money is not. And just that comment alone, I find it very interesting. I think that it speaks volumes, and if they really sit down and evaluate what they actually said, they would actually see that it's very interesting, to say the least. Again, I've said it several times. I'm not saying that it's a problem asking for help because we all ask for help in one way, shape, or form. Like I said, you may ask for help with paying your medical bills. The next person may ask for help with standing in line asking for food stamps because that's asking for help. That's asking for a hand. That's asking for, you know, food to be provided for your household to make sure that y'all have meals every day. And I'm not above saying that I was on food stamps before. See, that's the thing. I ain't trying to be nothing that I'm not. I'm not trying to down anybody. I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal by, you know, attacking or assaulting anybody. That's not my style. I'm just saying that I don't see how it could ever be negative with asking for people that if you want assistance or you need assistance, we don't mind helping you. We just ask that you do a drug test and pass it so that we know that the funds that we're helping you with is not going towards supplying Doughboy down the street with his Lexus because he done sold you some drugs. I don't see how that can produce, you know, not produce a great mother or father or not encourage people to be great parents. I don't see that. I don't mind, and I don't have nothing against people asking for help. I've asked for help before. I think we've all, if we admit it, have asked for help before in some way, shape, or form. That shouldn't be frowned upon. That shouldn't be, you know, overanalyzed. It's not affecting you, so you really shouldn't really matter. It shouldn't matter to you. But this bill, if they pass it to Maryland, it would affect people in my circle, and that's why I had a comment on it, and that's why I wanted to give my opinions on it. So what you guys think, I don't know, but you can put your comments below. Be respectful, of course, to all because I don't want it to be perceived as, oh, it's an issue because people are asking for help. Because like I said, everybody has asked for help. It's just a matter of what help did you ask for and how did you ask for it and who did you ask for it. That's all it is. But every single person has asked for help before, including myself. And that's not my issue. My issue is, or the question is it right for the government, social service, things of that nature, to ask for a drug test to be passed before they offer you any financial assistance in any way, shape, or form? And my answer, my answer may be because I don't do those things, but my answer over and over again is no, it's not nothing. I don't think it's anything wrong with them asking for that. In fact, I think that it encourages you to make sure that you prioritize. And sometimes we need help with that, and I think that would help people to make sure that their priorities are in the right area, especially as mothers and as parents, as men, as fathers, as just parents in general. And I say parents because even though that's not the only people that ask for assistance, but that's who I'm talking about right now. And that's who my circle involves, people that have children. But I don't see how that can make you less than a parent. In fact, I think that it encourages you responsibility and prioritizing. So whatever you think, you guys put it below underneath this video. I would love to hear your responses. I thank you all for talking and having a conversation on this, doing it with respect, but also giving your opinions. And yeah, if you know anything else about this bill, you can add it below because, like I said, I don't know much about it. But Daddy came out the room and he was telling me about it, so I decided to turn on the camera and do a quick video on it because I thought it was a really interesting subject. So on that note, you guys, you know how where I stand on it, and you have my full thoughts. Hopefully, you guys don't just hear one part of my thought or one part of my 15-minute video, but I hope that you guys heard the entire video and got what I was saying fully. Because if you do, then it wouldn't be any controversy over it. But of course, we know how petty people on YouTube are. We know how people eagerly wait for things to be able to say because they have other issues about my life today, I guess. But anyway, so yeah, go ahead and join in and in the conversation, and I thank you all for viewing and talking to me. I have a nice sale going on right now for Valentine's Day. Go check it out at bigcuz52.webs.com. Everything is $10 and under. Really, really cute fly stuff. And you're getting awesome, awesome deals. So I hope to see you there. Flat rate shipping, and the link will be below underneath this video. Thank you so much, you guys. Talk to you guys later. And be blessed.
All right, Mose. We're back. One of the, I decided to select that plug because I also wanted to say one of the other components that we have to consider inside the our family unit that we are structuring is prioritizing. You have to make sure that your priorities are arranged properly. And when you look at the definition of justice, and I like the definition of justice that Dr. Neely Fuller and Dr. Francis Cress Welsing have discussed over and over and over. Justice means that you guarantee that nobody is mistreated. And so when you are structuring your plans for creating your family business, for those of you who have not done so already, you want to make sure that you have structure in your plans. There are codes, there are rules, there are regulations and guidelines and all the benefits. There was a situation where a teacher had sent a note home with a student, and the note stated everything that the school was prepared to do in the event that the child broke a rule. If your child does this, then we're going to do this. If your child breaks this rule, then we are prepared to do that. These are the rules that we're laying out. But the parent took the letter and wrote out her own list and sent it back to the school that says, okay, what are you prepared to do if my child does not break rule number one? What benefits will they receive? What blessings would the child receive if they are successful in keeping rule number two? What benefits will the child receive when they are successful in keeping and not breaking rule number three? You see. So when we make a complete listing of all the rules, we want to also make a complete list of all the benefits. You see, because what we're trying to do and our primary objective is to create a family business, something that belongs to us, that we own, we run, we control. We determine how much money we are going to make. We determine how many hours we are going to work, because with your own family and your own family business, then you are contributing to the building of the basic unit of every society on this place. And that's the creation of the strength of the family structure. Now, when we begin to look at this thing in this light, that's a solution to a lot of problems that we have. We got mom and pop going in two different jobs in two different directions. They're getting off of work two different time periods. Mom gets off in the evening. Dad don't get off until 9 o'clock at night. There's no time for conversation. We run and rip all through the week, and then when the weekend come, we're too tired. We want to sleep in. We don't have time to hold a conversation with the kids because we've been too busy outside the basic unit of society making someone else who has a family structure in place rich, you see. and haven't done anything for our own family. We don't, you see what I'm saying? This is how vital this is. Now, we're going to deal with some more plugs, but I want to get to some of the contributing causes for the breakdown of the family unit among people of African descent inside the United States. There was a time we had mother and father and kids all in the same home. But there has been an assault against the family, and we have to recognize that. So we're going to look at some more things here in regards to the destruction and some of the things that we may not have considered that have contributed to the problem. So when we look at the problem and look at all the hidden dirt and things that we haven't had a chance to look at, or maybe haven't entered in our mind, then when we look at this, we're able to repair the damage and start turning this ship around and heading in the right direction. So we're going to look at some of the other contributing breakdown.
This is a war. Not only a war on our family, a war on our mind, a war on our potential. If you knew your history, you would not be beggars. You would insist and you would demand. Instead of begging for what belongs to you, you would gather the strength and take what belongs to you.
Tonight, because I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Dr. Umar, are you there?
Yes, sir.
All right, finally, they was trying to shut you down before you even got on, huh?
Yes, sir.
What's up, brother? Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
Now, you've been heavily active all over the country, and I think it's pretty hard to catch up with you. You're dropping information everywhere, much-needed information for our people. And I want to commend you for the work that you're doing, my brother.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Glad to hear that.
Now, there may be a few people out there living under a rock, you know, that may not be familiar with your work. For those, could you give us a bit about yourself?
Certainly. I'm a nationally certified school psychologist, which means I'm responsible for determining which children have disabilities and subsequent need for special education service. I decide who's retarded, learning disabled, emotionally disturbed, autistic, deaf, blind, speech and language impaired, traumatic brain injury, orthopedic impairment, multiple disabilities, developmental delay, mental giftedness. I'm also a clinician. My doctoral degree is in clinical psychology, so I deal with depression, borderline, bipolar, sadness, suicide, homicide. Also hold degrees in political science and education, former school administrator. Lifelong goal is to build an independent African-centered school, residential for our boys and ultimately for our girls. Former minister of education for Marcus Garvey's Universal Negro Improvement Association, largest black organization in modern history. Blood relative, Frederick Douglass, greatest black leader of the 19th century.
Indeed. Thank you for that introduction. I'm pretty sure people knew, but I just wanted to make sure people were up on everything. In my conversations with many warrior brothers such as yourself, I always am interested to know how you came to discover the path that you wanted to walk. What spurred you along that path to teach and help guide your people?
I think for me, it may have been somewhat preordained, and I'm not a religious kind of a guy, but when I look at my background and my training, my father having been a drill instructor for the United States Marine Corps, being raised in an African-American Sunni Islamic family, all white universities, there's really nothing in my background that would obviously lead me to the path that I was on. But from the earliest days of my life that I can remember, I had always had a love for my people, the red, black, and green flag, and knowing who I was. We had a mandatory black history class in fourth and fifth grade in North Philadelphia at the Meade Elementary School, public school where I attended. It's possible that maybe that fourth and fifth grade black history class sparked something in me. It's possible that me finding out the very next year in sixth grade at my family reunion in Baltimore that I was related to Frederick Douglass, that may have had something to do with it. Maybe it was that fourth, fifth, and sixth grade year that helped spark, possibly. But outside of that, if that's not the catalyst, then I would have to say that I was born to do the work that I do.
Definitely, definitely. Now, let's move it on to the topic. But you, there was something you spoke to. You said you wanted to start a school.
Yes, indeed. Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Pan-African Independence Academy for Young Black Men.
So what's your opinion on the African-centered schools that are around now? Would you say that they're doing the job well, educating the children?
Well, here's the problem. Most African-centered schools are white schools with dashikis and drums on top. And you have to understand that the purpose of educating a black child is in the art of acquiring and maintaining power. Now, if you can show me an African-centered school in America that teaches black children how to acquire and maintain political and economic power, then I would consent that we have some that's done what they're supposed to do. And I'm not trying to slam dunk the schools that we do have. I think many of them are doing the best that they can. But I just want to be crystal clear that I'm not aware of any school in this country, private, public, charter, parochial, black, white, African-centered, bourgeois, whatever you want to call them, that properly educates our children. I believe that there's six sciences that all African children need to be taught, and I don't know of any African-centered school that teaches all six. The first one, in no specific order, is political and military science. If you have not mastered the laws of political, economic, and physical combat, then how exactly do you expect to climb out of the hell in which you are in? You're not going to be able to pray your way out of this. You're not going to be able to libate your way out of this. You're not going to be able to meditate your way, march your way, or vote your way out of this. It's going to take strategy. And most wars are won before they are even fought. So if you're not teaching black children strategy, then you're not preparing them for liberation and revolution.
Agricultural
and agronomical science. If you're not teaching black children how to grow their own food to sustain life, if you can't sustain life, then you haven't been educated. And the average black person, whether he has a PhD or an MD, a PsyD or a JD, okay, doesn't know how to properly live off of the land. If you can't live off of the land, then you're not educated, according to my definition. And then you have to deal with spiritual science, teaching our children how to connect to the universe and the great I am through spiritual practices and techniques, and get them away from all this religious dogmatism that we have been feeding on for the last 100 years. You have to have spiritual science. Any revolution that we've had that was successful became successful because we included the ancestors in the victory. And unfortunately today, the ancestors do not have a role in many of our major movements, and because African spirituality at the base of these organizations and movements, they ultimately are going to fail because the white man calls on his ancestors. He calls on those devils same time, and we have to use spiritual and political principles at the same time. Up until now, our approach to black struggle has been lopsided, where you have brothers who are totally religious, who ain't have no damn political common sense, or you have brothers who are political, who ain't have no spiritual consciousness. You need both. Then we also have to teach our children the science of diet and nutrition. When to eat, what to eat, how to eat, so you're not helping the European kill you with your own conscious consent. Suicide through diet. So we have to deal with the science of diet and nutrition. And then we have to deal with the science of black family maintenance and development. The family is the foundational institution in our community. If that don't work, nothing else does. Children are taught to trust. They're taught to love. They're taught to struggle. They're taught who they are primarily through the family system. See, the only reason why the public school has more influence over our children than we do is because they have a system, but we don't. And then the last one is financial and economic science. We are money illiterate, and we've been money illiterate for 145 years since the 13th Amendment was passed. We don't know anything about wealth. We don't know anything about resources. We don't know anything about collateral, international debt. We don't understand none of that. And the only way we're going to get out of the situation exactly is to master the political landscape. So those six sciences will form the foundation of the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Pan-African Independence Academy for Boys, and ultimately the Anna Douglas and Amy Jakes and Ashwood Garvey Pan-African Independence Academy for Young Women. Let me say this before I forget, because it's extremely important. I am going to be putting together a documentary. Excuse me, not a documentary, a shockumentary. I'm going to be putting together a shockumentary entitled The Psycho-Academic War Against Black Boys from Grade School to the Graveyard. This, I hope, will be one of the cataclysmic events of the new age, the 2012 to come, that will help wake and resurrect our people up. We know psychologically that when you want to inspire a people, you have to do it through music and movies, because music and images are the language of the unconscious.
Yeah.
So after having watched Waiting for Superman, that Jeffrey Canada garbage, and after having watched other documentaries on education, I have come to the point that our story will not be told unless a Pan-Africanist teaches it. And so what I need for anyone in your listening audience who is willing to be interviewed, nothing extensive, 5 to 10 minute interview, for the purposes of constructing this documentary, I need them to text my cell phone. Text their name and their city and the word documentary to my cell number, 215-989-9858. Again, that's Dr. Umar Johnson's cell, 215-989-9858. Please follow directions. I didn't say Facebook me. I didn't say email me. I said text me, okay? So, for example, if I were texting myself, I would put Umar Johnson, Philadelphia, documentary. That's all that needs to be in the message. Umar Johnson, Philadelphia, documentary. I need that to be texted. And once that is text, then I know that you're willing to be interviewed. And once I meet with my my videographer, I will be able to contact folks and let them know exactly how the interviews are going to be handed out.
Wow, that's something I can't wait to see. I know when you say it's a shockumentary, I know it, you know, anytime you're talking about the psychological aspect of our struggles, a lot of people would be very, you know, surprised. And to speak to what you were saying earlier, a lot of people don't realize all these things are connected to our situation and the key to how we escape it. You know, all six aspects, they're not separate. You know, that's personally my opinion. Most movements don't have that. Most organizations don't cover all six. You know,
that's
something that definitely is a path that we need to move on. For real. Now,
I just wanted to comment. I definitely, you know,
what you're saying too, Doctor, because, and again, online this discussion came up about, you know, would you leave money for your children and that type of thing. And, you know, again, to each his own, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but I was, you know, shocked at some of the responses I got because, you know, I saw a lot of, no, I ain't leaving them nothing. You know, they can make it on their own, and that, you know, that type of mentality, and it's like, wow. I mean, you know, it's no wonder we as a culture are in the situation that we are in because, we're not willing to do for our children and teach them those important steps to even build an empire. You know what I mean? But then how can we teach something that we don't know? So,
yeah. Well, nation building, rather. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, one nation building too. Yeah.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the mechanics of self-hate and how it works. You've spoken on self-hate a number of times as well. What is your description of self-hate and how it affects us?
Self-hate.
Okay, we're coming right back. Dr. Umar Johnson, as we formulate some of the problems that have caused us to get out from under realizing the importance of the family structure, because regardless of whatever it is that we're going to participate in or build outside the home, is going to have to be formulated inside. And the best formulation for anything that you are planning to do should be done among who? Your family. Your family. The family, the basic family unit. Whatever it is that you're going to do is going to have resources. And if you're going to have resources, the first people that you want to consider these resource gatherings with is your own family. And you're going to make sure that each family member participates and benefits from whatever it is that you decide to do. You put the plans on the table, everybody look at them, everybody gives their opinion. You may have to go through a couple of meetings before y'all can hammer out everything that you're going to do long before you actually start doing something. But the key is, the number one key is to start now with the family unit, with right where you are. Okay? Sit down and discuss it. Find out what everybody's talents is. Let's lay this thing out on the table, and let's get this job underway, and let's get to what we call diversifying our situation. Let's change the future based on what we're trying to do as a unit. Now, the extended family, because some of us may you might have a situation where you have a single parent and children. Okay, mama, you can formulate something, and you might even talk to your sisters and brothers about it. They may not be interested, but you can extend your family to those who are interested and who's prepared to invest in what you got going, but you make sure that your children end up participating and benefiting as a family unit, right where you are, okay? You may have to get a cousin. You may have to deal with an uncle. You may have to just deal with a best friend or something. But it's got to be built on a family structure. You're going to have meetings. You're going to have conversations. You're going to have to formulate this thing, okay, and make sure that it is something that you all can agree on and that you all can benefit from. That's how this thing is done. So when we start looking at things from this perspective, and
stop simply going through the motions, getting up, going to a 9-to-5 job, and working hard, making other people rich, and then coming home, you got to fuss and fight with your mate, you know, and so you're not accomplishing anything. You know, there are people that work on jobs who I have been told, well, look, I want to work overtime. I don't want to go home because I don't want to hear that noise from so-and-so. When I get off, I work late, then he sleep, and I don't have to worry about that. Or she sleep, I don't have to worry about her with this, that, and the other. And it's a shame for it to be like that, and we got to change these things. And one of the best changes is to show the people in your own environment how they can profit by coming together as a family and putting something together that we can all work on and benefit from, you see. That's one of the most important things that we can do. And let us continue. Keep in mind now, once again, as I stated, for those of you who are on your social sites, go ahead and send me your friend request. I'll go ahead and grant that. I'm going to open up the phone lines. If any of you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand and let me know what's on your mind and how you see this thing, and I will let you in. Also, don't forget, Talkers Archives is a powerful tool and a resource base in the event when you decide to deal with the family structure. There's tons of information in there. Tons of information on law, you name it, is right there and available to you, right there in Talkers Archives. We access that, go to TARHAKAARCHIVS, and once you get in there, then you call me, and then you got me over here on the other side, helping out. I'll be part of the family too, because you have a coaching situation going on, and you have some guidance, and you got some benefit. Okay. So just consider that as part of what you're doing. Now we're going to go into the next segment here involving Dr. Umar Johnson.
Is the deliberate self-destruction of all institutions and activity that one needs to engage in for their forward progress. And it is done with the conscious or subconscious knowledge that it is being done on behalf of one's enemy or oppressor. So the oppressed person who participates in self-destruction is willingly doing it to the advantage of his oppressor, because self-destruction is based on the premise that if I could, I would have joined the enemy's camp.
Hmm. Wow. Indeed. And that's something very – do you think that has roots in slavery, from our past in slavery and, some of the oppression that we experienced after slavery?
Oh, without doubt. I mean, slavery was the deliberate engineering of self-hatred into African people. And it was a 243-year in America, and even longer in other places, deliberate engineering of African people. And because of that, we have to recognize that the enslavement of African people was probably one of the greatest or most intense forms of psychological conditioning. I'm not aware of another population in world history who went through that degree of psychological trauma with that degree of intensity. Now, when we talk about slavery, people are quick to say that you guys were not the only slaves and you were not the first ones, which is true. Mm-hmm. We were not the only and we were not the first. However, our form of enslavement was unlike that of any other people, because it is the only one where the victim was dehumanized, and that's something that we tend not to deal with a lot. We were not considered to be human beings. We were animals. No other form of slavery ever in world history stripped the slave from his or her humanity, but American slavery did. So when we talk about the dehumanization process, which runs parallel to the self-hatred process, we got to recognize that the self-hatred black people have doesn't just stem from the fact that we're black. It also stems from the fact that we were taught that we're not even human.
Now we always hear people talk about, you know, slavery being in other places. Do you think that, I mean, me personally, I think that it's a part of excusing the white man for a lot of the things that he did and finding some reason to, you know, forgive him so that we can, you know, forget about the past?
The desire to forgive white people for the evils that they inflicted then and now,
mm-hmm.
is it motivated out of any altruistic personality variable? It is motivated by one principle and one principle only, and that is loyalty to your oppressor. We only are so quick to be willing to forgive and forge alliances because we are loyal to him, more loyal to him than we are to our own selves. For example, take President Obama. Great majority of black folk are loyal to Obama, but Obama is loyal to the American social order. So how can you be more loyal to the system that is destroying your people than you are to your people? And it's because at the end of the day, most black people are not upset with white supremacy and how it treats black people. They are upset that they weren't one of the few blacks who were chosen. Who were chosen by white supremacy to help carry out their functions. See, even when you look at the conscious community, those of us who are considered conscious, you got to realize now you have a lot of different motives for why people are participating in the conscious community. For example, some people are in the conscious community to make a dollar. Some people are in the conscious community because they want to use it as a stepping stone to political office. Some people are in the conscious community because they tried to get a seat at the round table of the black bourgeoisie in Boulé, but were rejected. And out of anger at being rejected, they decided to become a so-called revolutionary. You got black folk who either were once at the table of white supremacy or applied for a seat and was either put out or refused, and because of their anger, because they were rejected, they came to the conscious community. And these two groups are very dangerous. Why? Because if they are ever offered the opportunity to rejoin the bourgeois or rejoin the American social order, they would do it in a heartbeat. And that's why you can look at people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, who at one time were considered grassroots leaders, who never really were. They were simply in it to get rich. And as you can see, as soon as they got money, they faded into the black.
Wow. Yeah. Now, is that a personality flaw within many African people that we aren't angry?
It is a racial flaw. Mm-hmm. It is part of that conditioning. And I think we have the anger, but the anger is misdirected. See, depression, which I would say many of us suffer from a collective racial depression. When you look at the criteria for depression, black people as a group, although maybe not as individuals, but as a group, we meet the criteria for depression. Not taking responsibility for yourself, not having faith in your ability, lack of motivation to change your circumstances. Look at the criteria, the clinical criteria for depression, and collectively African people in America meet it. Now, depression can also be defined as internalized self-hatred or anger. The anger isn't directed at the enemy, it's directed at yourself. And so we are angry, but we're angry with the wrong folk. We're blaming ourselves for our condition as opposed to blaming ourselves for not solving it. And you got to distinguish between the two. You can't blame yourself for the condition because you didn't create it. And you hear a lot of black people say, well, we're our own worst enemy. No, we're not. Why? Because we don't spend billions of dollars to keep ourselves where we are. We don't spend any money on ourselves. But white supremacy spends billions on the prisons, billions on the miseducation industry, okay? Billions on the psychiatric medicine industry. They spend billions on police, billions on the CIA covert drug operation. So you can't say you're your number one problem
okay, because you didn't create your problems. Your problem is not trying to solve the problem. So we become complicit. We become complicit in our oppression by not doing anything about it. But we have to be clear. We didn't start these problems. Okay, the problem started when we were brought here. And for those of us who were already here, the problem started when we were oppressed. So we didn't start the problem. But by not doing anything about it, we become white supremacy's greatest accomplice to their crime.
Now, how does that thought of ourselves being our worst enemy play into becoming almost a pawn for the system of racism, white supremacy?
Total. It's total. Because when you say you are the problem, dichotomous statement, you are the problem, I'm automatically absolving every major American institution that participates in and created my issues. I'm absolving them of any responsibility. When you say we are the problem, not white folk, when you say that, they love it because it lets them off the hook. It says the miseducation system isn't to blame. The mass unemployment system isn't to blame. The psychiatric drug cartel isn't to blame. The CIA drugs operation isn't to blame. COINTELPRO isn't to blame. The United States Congress isn't to blame. The fact that black people only own less than 0.5% of all the wealth in America, that's not to blame. It's them. And so when we say that it's us, we automatically support their argument because guess what? They're arguing the same thing. So the black person who says that black people are their problem, not white folks, are automatically supporting the enemy's position. Because his position is we didn't create these problems. You Negroes did. Okay? And the reason you created this problem is because you don't know how to do any better. Because all of you are born genetically predisposed to screw your lives up. You're born defective. So you're not able to build your industries. You're not able to raise your children. You're not able to get along. And so when we say we are our own worst enemy, we become what? The first piece of evidence that white folk will use to justify their position, because now they can say we're not the only ones who believe black people are in the condition they're in because of them. Black people believe that they're in the condition they're in because of them. So you don't have to listen to us. Just listen to their own folk, and they'll tell you that they agree with us. So anybody who says that becomes an accomplice to the crime.
And that's an excellent point, Doctor. But you know what I find so sad about that argument is that these very same people are not aware of the fact that it was our ancestors way back in our story that, you know, built all of these great structures that implemented and refined the music, the arts, the, you know, mathematics, astronomy, and all these different things that are being used today all over the globe.
The things that they marvel
that
at.
That will sit up there and say or will agree, excuse me, with the argument that we're our own worst enemy will be the very ones that will buy into, you know, that story. Well, you know, no, y'all didn't do this. It wasn't y'all ancestors that did this. It was the aliens. It was anybody else but our ancestors that did it. You know?
Oh, without a doubt.
I find that very, it's pathetic, actually, but continue.
Well, and you get black people to support that racist notion, too. That black people didn't build it. Aliens did.
Right.
And you get black people. White folk always have black people who they could point to justify their arguments. Why? Because they trained them. When you make a man in the image you want them to be in and you control his thinking, then you automatically know that you'll be able to go to him to justify your position because his thoughts are yours. As a man is taught, so is his thoughts. But we also have to be conscious of the fact that political power is concentrated in the present. Political power is concentrated in the present, which means despite the great history that we've had, if we don't build power now, in the here and now, in the present, then ultimately what we did in the past is almost irrelevant because wars are fought in the present. Political power is acquired in the present. Economic power is a
present reality, not just the past one. And so I think sometimes we get into a habit of trying to ignore our current powerlessness by looking for examples of our power in the past. And that's okay from an instructive position. But when we try to use the past to protect us in the present, it's never going to work. You see, because your past makes you great, but it's your activity in the present that maintains that greatness. And if your activity in the present isn't maintaining that greatness, the fact that you was great at some point in history really doesn't mean anything to anybody. For anyone who watches sports, they know that once the New York Giants won the Super Bowl, that was cute. Y'all celebrated, but guess what? It's time for the next season. You'll be able to talk about that you won the Super Bowl. You'll be able to show the football and the trophy, and all that's good, but guess what? It's over now. Because it's all about the here and now. And unfortunately, black folk, because of our unwillingness to take responsibility for our present and our future, are always doing what? Escaping back into the past. So we have taken our culture and our history, and we made a religion out of it, where we simply use it as a form of escapism to escape from our present responsibilities, because we really don't want to face them.
Now, I have a quick question, because I know Brother Chills wants to, you know, get some other things going. But just real quickly, so do you believe, because the way I've tried to look at it is, it can be, you know, some things in our past could be used as a way to help motivate, you know what I mean? Like, look, this is what we accomplished then. We can do even better now, you know what I mean, for our future. Would you agree with that, Doctor?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey both said, and I'm paraphrasing that, you must use the past to inspire. The Sankofa, the whole image of Sankofa, the symbol, it is a bird who's what? Walking forward while looking back, taking that from the past that you can use constructively to create your present and your future. But remember, the bird is walking forward.
Yes.
He's not standing still studying the past. He's walking forward, reaching back to get those things that he needs on the journey forward. Our problem is that if you made a Sankofa bird to represent the cultural consciousness of black folks, then that bird's feet must be planted in cement, because we're not walking forward. We're standing still studying the past.
Okay. Very, very important information for us to consider during the construction of our family. The economic portions and the information that the Dr. Umar Johnson brought up is extremely important, especially the part about the food, because apart from your economic situation, when you're dealing with your economics, your family structure, health is extremely important. That's a vital part. That's very, very important. Everybody wants to be involved in the health aspect because it is not going to do you any good to have a good, sound financial structure and all this. And then we got family members who are in poor health. And, of course, if you got a family member that is in poor health, then everybody in the family should come to the aid of that family member or try to support that family member. And all too often, sometimes we don't do that, but we need to be concerned about that and make that put that on your list as well while you're building your strong family ties in preparation for creating your own family business. We'll be right back in a moment, so you all are. Just stick around, and we'll continue with this broadcast, okay? So you all hold on.
Let's go. Can you feel what I
Okay, Mose, we back. Now, we want to take Black's Law Dictionary 6th edition, and we're going to deal with the word family. Most commonly refers to the group of persons consisting of parents and children, father, mother, and their children, immediate kindred, consisting fundamental social unit in civilized society. A collective body of persons who live in one house and under one head or management. A group of blood relatives, all the relatives who descend from a common ancestry, who spring from a common root. Now, I'm going to stop right there for just 1 second before I read on. We have to look at the fact that people of African descent definitely come from one family root. A group of kindred persons, husband and wife and their children, wherever they may reside and whether they dwell together or not, that is a family. The word conveys the notion of some relationship, blood or otherwise. In restricted sense, the word family may be used interchangeably with household. When used in constitution of benefit society, declaring its purpose among others as that of aiding the families of members, the word means such persons as habitually reside under one roof and from one domestic circle, are such persons as are dependent on each other for support or among whom there is legal or equitable obligation to furnish support, and in its widest scope, it would include all descendants of a common progenitor. As used in context of uninsured motorists, insurance coverage family is not confined to those who stand in a legal or blood relationship. Okay, so now we know exactly the extent of a family, and also within the context of that definition, we also find the extended definition located in there as well. Now, we're going to go ahead and continue, and keep in mind the lines are open. If anybody have a question or comment, now's the time to raise your hand, and I'll open up the line so you can get in. And you can let us know what's on your mind, okay? So just follow the props on your telephone, and I'll get a signal on this end that you got something to say, and I'll open up the line so that you can tell me exactly what it is, okay? Family is business, and business is family, and if we can build that and understand that and get that working, I guarantee you there'll be a whole lot more. You can get families together. We got family members that are in prison.
Okay, Morris. Tahaka Archives has just added a ton of new information this evening, and before the week is out, we'll be adding much, much more. This is the most awesome library inside the country. It's designed for you to actually use and to make transformations in your lives. There's tons of material for your children to get the truth about what really happened in ancient times as well as in history. There's an abundance of information and documentation that you can actually use, fill in the blanks, get them notarized, and file them when you're doing your affidavits. And if you're filing lawsuits, whatever, you, all the tools that you need are there. So in order to access that, simply go to TahakaArchives.org. That's TahakaArchives, TahakaArchives.org. Okay? Thanks.
Okay. Now we're going to go into a little bit deeper sense of what is taking place, because we want to make sure that we get a clear understanding of what has happened to us. Why is it that everybody's on top and we're not? What happened? How severe was the damage to people of African descent involving why we don't have strong family ties across the country, and all of us are not participating in our own family business first, opposed to filling all the streets and highways up from 5 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the morning, going to work for somebody else, making somebody else rich. That's got to change. Let's take a look at some other things and see what has taken place, so that we will know what other reasons that we have.
Here's how he did it. He said, get the strongest nigger male, and here's how you treat him. You bring him out and you bring, excuse the language, you bring the nigger female and the nigger baby, and then you tie this strong nigger's foot to a horse on this side and his other foot to a horse on that side. Then you tie and feather that nigger and set him on fire. And when the horses start pulling in two different directions, they'll rip that nigger apart in the presence of the woman and the baby. And her listening to his screams and begging for mercy, she'll know then she can't depend on him. Then you get another big strong nigger, and you bring him and you get your bull whip and you beat him. You don't kill him, but you beat him within an inch of his life.
Come on.
Until he's crying and screaming and praying and begging. And when that woman sees the man in that state, she'll be psychologically frozen. And all her daughters will be like her. They'll come out independent. And the boys, they'll have strong bodies but weak minds. And out of her instinct to protect her male child, she'll break that male child for us and turn him over to us. And we'll give him many fields of labor, but he will be working for us, broken by her. And right now in the South, this is South Carolina, y'all know what I'm talking about. Some white man would come to your house, and you a beautiful young girl, and he would tell your father, send her out. He wanna have sex with her. And the man had no power. He's frightened to death to resist. Go on, baby. And right now, you look at the plot. Black women fill in the colleges. Black men fill in the jails. Where, sister, is your man going to come from? You at Benedict College, 69-70% female, 30-38% male. So the women outnumber the men, so you become a playground.
Come on, teach, brother, man.
Men playing with you. And you have lost so much respect for yourself.
Come on.
That you allow a man to play with you. And then he go back in the dorm and talk about that bitch that he had. We have become so degraded now that when rap started in the South Bronx, it was young black men using the art of the spoken word, but that's rap. They were talking to young men about the condition, not ghetto life, but they were passing on germs of knowledge and wisdom in rap, but the money lenders and the corruptors saw money in this, and skillfully they turned it from conscious rap to gangster rap, and we began glorifying the gun, glorifying the lowest part of life in the hood, glorifying the sale and use of drugs and the snapping of a cap in your brother. And then they glorify beefs and whatnot between rappers and their posses. Willie Lynch alive and well, West Coast rap, East Coast rap. See, now we're against each other from the East, from the West, from the North, from the South. We're against each other in terms of color. We're against each other in terms of those who are educated and those who are not. We're against each other from those that have money and those that are not. And then those of us who get some status as a councilman, a senator, a mayor, we're just senators and mayors of the plantation. We are in the big house. We're the house niggas and the ones in the field that don't have no job. They the field niggas. And here you are in college with an inferior education that will not allow you to compete in a global economy. This is real, brothers and sisters. Willie Lynch's stuff is real. It comes all the way up to preachers. They lie about how big their church is. Well, I have my church seats 3,000. Oh, that ain't nothing. Mine seats 5,000. See, it's that status thing again. You arguing over what? You got more followers. You a bigger preacher. You got more people listening to you. All of this is Willie Lynch. And then the envy of pastors arguing with one another, jealous of one another. Then the white Christian right take a black man and build him up, give him money, put him on television, give him all kinds of backing. I've never heard a black man preach like T.D. Jakes. That man is anointed. But Bush called him. Bush, who messed up down there in New Orleans. He wouldn't even go down when it first happened. Then he come down, but he's like the Lone Ranger looking for Tonto to bail his raggedy behind out. So he brings an anointed man of God to clean his behind. Now, brothers and sisters, in my conclusion, this is a habitation of devils and a hole for every foul spirit. We can't walk the streets of Columbia like we used to do years ago in the South. In the South, we walk, we meet another black person. Good morning. You don't have to know them. Good morning. Good afternoon. How are you? Doors wasn't locked. You didn't lock your doors against one another. But today the spirit is so foul among us. We kill each other over a parking space. Kill each other over who won the shot when you're shooting crap. When you're gambling. I've seen black men killed over a burger. Human life means nothing no more. We weren't like this in the darkest days of slavery, brothers and sisters. We are worse now as a people than we have ever been.
And now I say to you all, God is angry with America, but God is also displeased with us. We've been playing with God and marketing Jesus like a commodity, but ain't nobody following him. See? Jesus said, if any man would be my disciple, he must first deny himself, pick up his cross, and then follow me. Not worship me, follow me. We in church worshiping Jesus rather than following Jesus. In the book of John, Jesus said, God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. Jesus was not trying to get us to worship him. He was trying to get us to worship the one that he said was his Father. And when the servant asked him, Master, teach us how to pray, he said, pray on this wise, our Father. Family, family, family. We are a long way off from God.
All right, Moses, we're back. Now, I want to look at something else here. And I want to deal with what's called family arrangement. Now, we're still in Black's Law 6th edition. It says a term denoting an arrangement between a father and his children or between the heirs of a deceased father to dispose of property or to petition it in a different manner than that which would result if the law alone directed it, or to divide up property without administration. In these cases, free quantity, the mere relation of the parties, will give effect to the bargains, otherwise without adequate consideration. One of the things that we do, and I teach brothers and sisters how to do across the United States, is to set up their estates and to do your will and get your will filed on record down at the courts. A lot of cases they try to block you. They want you to be dead. They don't want you to come in there and file a will while you're living, because if you do, then the courts are forced to carry out your will. But there's a way to get it done. Now, I like to encourage those of you who are new that we do have the wills, the trusts, and all this information set up right there in the archives for you, so that you can get this done and make that a part of what you add to your family structure when you are dealing with setting up an economic base among your own family members within the confines of your own home, and also to be exported out outside of the family to your extended family, or those people who may be blood relatives but living in a different location, who may be no kin to you at all by blood, but is willing to participate in the family business and be a part of the family business and contribute to the building of the family business. And so we want to make sure that these are some of the most vital components that we consider in our family structure. Not only growing your own food and setting up the financial aspects, but also doing your will. You can set up a trust. The family can operate through the trust. You can set up your estate and make sure you get that done. And all that information is right there in Tahaka's archive. Now, we're going on to the next plug. And this time we're going to deal with relationships. And that's all vital and a part of your family structure. So we're going to take a look at this thing here and see what it has to say in regards to what we're trying to accomplish here
with the family.
Align your bodies. We all have four bodies. You got the physical, you got the emotional, okay? You have the mental, okay? And then you also mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical. Those are your four. Mental, spiritual, emotional, and physical. You have to align all four of those bodies up. Let me give you an example. You might be spiritually healthy but physically unhealthy. If you're spiritually healthy and physically unhealthy, then your spirituality can only go but so far. Because as all the great master teachers taught, that if the body is not healthy, it's going to be difficult for the mind to be at peace. Anybody who's affected with an illness, their mind is not at peace. It's very difficult to put it at peace. So when we talk about being spiritual, you can't just live in your mind. You have to understand that there's a relationship between the spirit and the body planes. And if one of them isn't healthy, it's automatically going to affect the other. Just like if you're healthy physically, but you're not healthy spiritually. You got a lot of folk who are super athletes. They run every morning. They do their push-ups. Physically, they appear in perfect health. But what they fail to realize is that those negative thoughts that they keep on feeding themselves will crystallize into not bodily manifestations. And this is how you get folk who never had a piece of meat in their life, but they still suffer from high blood pressure. How did that happen? Okay? Drunk alkaline water all their life, okay, but now they got cancer. How is that when there's no physical evidence as to why you have this malady? A lot of it has to do with the spiritual intoxication that manifests within the body. Remember, every major organ in the body is attached to a particular emotion. So whenever you experience that emotion, it is actually lodged in that particular part of the body. So when you get cancer, when you get diabetes, okay, when epilepsy develops within the brain, it's normally because of a spiritual imbalance or the stoppage of energy. The stoppage of energy. And when you hold on to grudges, you actually stop the energy of life from cycling in. See, pain is weakness leaving the body. But many of us like to hold on to that weakness because we identify with it. So we want to hold it. We don't want to let it go. And some of us carry it around 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And whenever you're holding a grudge, you tend to age about 5 times faster. So you'll see that you'll start to look older than what you should look because you're not only living for yourself, you're living for your unhealthy pain body as well. So you want to do an assessment of yourself. Where are you mentally? By mental, we're talking about your thoughts, your cognitions, your process of interpreting your experience. That's your mental. Then we got to talk about the spiritual, your connection to the universe, the supreme source, your own internal soul. Where are you on that level? Then we got to talk about the emotional, the way in which you regulate your feelings, your emotional reactions to the things that happen to you in life. And then we got to talk about the physical, your health, what you eat, how you breathe, and your lifestyle. Lifestyle is important too. Why? Because no matter how healthy you may eat, no matter how spiritual you may be, if you don't give the spirit and the mind time to cleanse and recoup itself, it'll break down. For example, right now, a lot of black women, more than in any time in our history, are being admitted involuntary commissions for nervous breakdowns. A lot of sisters are going to the hospitals for nervous breakdowns because a lot of us believe that to be strong women or strong men, we should never have to take a break and give our bodies and our minds times to energize, that we should be able to keep on going. But your brain isn't made like that. See, when you talk about black women or black men 75 to 100 years ago, you have to remember they existed within a certain religious or spiritual milieu. So even though they worked a lot, they also had a lot of spiritual work going on at the same time. We don't have that. So it's important that you don't overload your brain, because when you overload the brain, it will just shut down on you. And that's what you call a nervous breakdown. Folks are walking around on the street out of their minds. That's called brain overload. Just like you overload a computer, you can overload the brain. And one of the things we have to start practicing more is what I call spiritual indifference. Spiritual indifference. Some of us have not perfected the art of ignoring things that don't matter. Some of us choose to react emotionally to everything that come our way. You don't have to react to everything that comes your way. Pick and choose what gets your spiritual attention. Pick and choose what gets your mental attention. Pick and choose what gets your emotional attention. For example, I hear a lot of black folks say, well, you know, I'm working on a job with a bunch of Europeans, and they are stressing me out. Well, automatically, we made an interpretive mistake there, because nobody can stress you out. Stress is the result of your interpretation of the experience. The white man doesn't own the interpretation, you do. So if you're getting stressed out, it's because you're giving them the power to stress you. At the end of the day, you make the final decision. Very important we understand that. See, we get in the habit of saying, he made me angry, she made me angry, that made me sad. Nobody can give you any emotional state. Nobody can. You choose them yourself, consciously or unconsciously. You interpreted the event in such a way that your mind had no choice but to become upset. See, all of us live our lives based on a program. And for many of us, that program was put into our minds by our parents, by our extended family, and by the society. And based on the program that you're operating your life on, some of you are destined to be depressed, destined to be anxious, destined to be alcoholic, because the way in which you interpret your world always brings about a negative reaction. Do y'all see that? Two people with the same experience can come out of it two totally different ways. Two totally different ways. Two people get laid off, two different reactions. Two people get disrespected in public, two totally different reactions. You have to become more proactive in dealing with situations and not reactive. Save your emotions for when you need them. Emotions can do just as much good as they can do just as much damage. And too many of us are reacting too much to emotion. Whenever you react, your body automatically releases cortisol, adrenaline, which works against the immune system. People who are emotionally unhealthy also tend to be physically unhealthy. Why? Because the emotions release toxins into your bloodstream that beat down your organs. So it is almost impossible to be physically healthy and emotionally unhealthy. One is going to destroy the other. And what we need is a balance in both of them. Next slide. Check your social network. Too many of us are hanging with people who are no good. Too many of us, because we don't like being alone, would rather hang with bad friends than no friends. Okay? Bad friends than no friends. Okay? I get folk who tell me, well, I know he don't really like me, but we grew up together, you know, and that's just how it's going to be. You know, and you knew the whole time that they were not a friend, but a friend in me, okay, an enemy in a friend's disguise. It is better to be by yourself than to be with people who don't mean you well. Because when you're around people who you're not comfortable with, and when you're not around people who you cannot trust, your suspicion is heightened. And suspicion is a form of stress. And whenever you're always being stressed out like that, the mind begins working against itself, and it never gets to take a break. See, every organ in the body is supposed to take a break, but the one that doesn't is the mind. The mind never takes a break. It runs and it runs and it runs and it runs, and most of it isn't even being ran by you. It's being ran by everybody but you. So what we have to do is retake control over our thought process to improve the way that we're living our lives. Next one. Learn to love solitude. If you can't be by yourself, you won't be able to be at peace with nobody else. And too many of us don't like being alone. We always have to have somebody else with us, whether it's a significant other, whether it's a brother, sister, girlfriend, mom, dad. I always look in therapy for folks to spend time with themselves. How much do you spend time with yourself? Well, I don't have time. No, that's a cop-out. That's the not. Why are you not spending time with yourself? And the reason we don't spend time with ourselves is because when you're by yourself, your subconscious automatically brings to consciousness all those unfinished tasks that you had in life. People you should have got rid of, goals you should have accomplished, certain objectives that you never met. And because a lot of us find it painful to analyze our lives and where we've been, we'd rather shut that out. And the best way to shut off the unconscious from reminding us of our shortcomings is to get somebody else to distract us. So when you find people who just got to be busy all the time, I mean, every day, every hour, they either sleep or they busy. They never at peace and by themselves. That's because there's no internal peace. And these are the type of people who do what? Rush into a relationship looking for somebody to take their mind off of themselves. And when you're no longer sufficient to distract Umar from Umar, I dump you and pick up somebody else who I think could do the job better. So you see, the relationship wasn't even based on you at all. It was based on my hidden agendas, my psychological hidden agendas. And all of us have hidden agendas. You got to know what they are so you can control them without them controlling you. Very important we understand that. Next slide. You have to be by yourself. I don't care if it's an hour. I don't care if it's 30 minutes. I don't care if it's a walk during lunchtime. But it is absolutely necessary for the spirit and the mind and the body and the emotional body, those four bodies, to realign. And they do that through silence. When your mind stops activating, that's when God consciousness comes in. But most of the time, God consciousness can't come in because we're constantly distracting it with the thunder of our thoughts. So you got all this internal noise going on. So how can the subtle voice of the universe communicate to you and your chakra bodies when the mind is always agitated? So somebody who's always agitated can never be at peace.
Okay. All right, Moose. That's very, very important.
to take time out to reflect and be alone with your own thoughts. A lot of times people find themselves alone in an environment, and they go from one mind occupied to another. They will get up and they'll cut on the television and they'll cut that off, and then they'll go back and they'll do something else, and then they'll go and do something else. And but it's a good idea to, in a lot of cases, when you start using the brain for some other purpose other than keeping it distracted so it won't have to think. Get your paper and pencil out and start putting some stuff down. Formulate some plans. Make some phone calls. Talk to somebody about the plans. Get some opinions on them. And this is very important for you to start using the brain. And that's all also goes into the family structure. Look at the economic side of what you're doing. Look at, take a look at the food that you want to grow. Take a look at the area you want to grow it in. I mean, just get this thing set so that you can be self-sustaining, and that you and your family can prosper, and your extended family can be a part of that, and they can prosper as well. So the reason I'm putting these particular plugs here so that you can see what you have to do, where we've been, what's cut out for us, the work that's cut out for us, and what we need to be doing.
We already discovered the precession of the equinox. The precession of the equinox, you can look this up, answers.com. Answers.com is a really good resource. One of the things I'm going to do here, I don't hog information. I share information and share resources with you also. What happens is the Earth sits on its axis at a 23.5-degree angle and rotates. It completes one rotation every 24 hours. This is your 24-hour day. Okay? The Earth is constantly moving, even though we don't feel like it's, even though we don't feel it moving. Not only does the Earth rotate, but the Earth goes in a celestial path around the Sun counterclockwise. Okay? It takes 365 days, 5 hours, 48 minutes, and 45.51 seconds for one complete celestial revolution around the sun, for the go around the sun. That's your solar year or your annual year, okay? That's your calendar year, based upon the Gregorian calendar. What happens is, as the Earth is going around the sun, the sun and the moon have a gravitational effect on the Earth. It causes what's called a wobble effect. Okay. You can look this up in astronomy books. You can go online. You can Google it. It causes a wobble effect. If you think back to when you were a kid and you were playing with a spinning top, it spins around, and as the revolutions per second slow down, it starts to wobble, but it's still spinning around. Okay, it's still spinning. The Earth does the same thing. Okay, for that wobble, for one complete wobble to take place, it takes about 25,920 years for that to take place. They just rounded to 26,000. Okay. That's called the precession of the equinox. And the orientation of the Earth to the sun and the constellation changes over that 26,000 years. Now, for you to realize that that's not a fluke, you have to observe it at least twice. Okay, we have already discovered the precession of the equinox. So you're talking about 52,000 years. Now, when you divide the 26,000 by 12, it gives you something like 2,106 or something like that. That's what's known as an age, A-G-E. You've heard this song by the Fifth Dimension. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. That's what an age is. Okay, this is all dealing with astronomy. Now, to discover the precession of the equinoxes, you need a few things. Number one, you need something to write on. Number two, you need something to write with. Number three, you need a language to write in. And number four, you need some type of observational equipment to observe what's going on, because you can't just look at all this with your naked eye. Okay? So we had already discovered this. All right? You can't, and to understand that and to build the pyramids, you need to understand astronomy, and you need to understand calculus, which is what Dr. David Hotel pointed out to me as well. We had already discovered all these things. Okay? So we are much older. The pyramids are much older than what they're telling us. The reason why they try to cut off the history of African people, cut off the history of the pyramids, things like that, is a few reasons. Number one, because Europeans are not that old, number one. Number two, is because Bishop James Usher in the early 1700s dated creation on October 23rd, 4004 BC. So this is, according to the church, this is when they said creation started. Now, notice I didn't say this is when they said Adam was created. He was created sometime after that. But they say creation starts October 23rd, 4004 BC. So all this stuff that occurred before that, they got to find some way to rationalize it. So they truncate our history. All right, this is what's going on. So this is why we have to do the primary research, and we have to go beyond that. We have to understand what's the literature and what's actually world history. Okay. All right. So, So he did. He told. Also, now he said the pyramid, and I think I have my notes on the show somewhere, so I'll come across those. He said that the pyramid is the pyramid of Giza, was the pyramid of Khufu, that is built in 73,000 BC. The step pyramid at Saqqara, which Imhotep was the architect of, that's from the third dynasty. That's even older than the pyramid at Giza. Okay, that's thousands of years older than that. Now, that all makes sense because you have to understand. The article I just, okay, you had an article there, that's fine. The article that I just shared with you shows that we were sailing 130,000 years ago, okay? Crete. Crete is above Africa, it's above Egypt, it's above North Africa, okay? Civilization starts in southern Africa, in the area, east southern Africa, in the area around Uganda, Tanzania. They go up the Nile River from the south to the north. The Nile River flows from the south to the north. So you got to go up past Ethiopia, Sudan, which was then Nubia, up past ancient Kemet or Timari, which is today Egypt. You got to go up past all that to get to Crete. Okay? So it makes sense that we were already inhabiting those areas. All right, so this is why we got to. Now, did anybody find out about that? That article was from 2 years ago. Did anybody find out about that article before today? Okay. All right. Write down that source also. New York Times has some good information as well. Now, quickly also, front page Matt. Now, this is, now let me show you something, what's going on now. Did anybody here right now in Egypt, this came out, today's the 14th, this came out 4 days ago. Right now in Egypt, there is a call from Muslim clerics to destroy the pyramids of Giza. Anybody hear about that? Got the article right here. Okay, you see my Facebook page?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I got the article right here. This is from July 10th, and I talked to Renoko Rashidi about this also. He's following this as well. This is from July 10th, frontpagemag.com. Sister Nubia first posted this. That's how I first found out about it. Sister Nubia is an archaeologist. She's from Detroit. She may be here today. She travels to the Sudan to do the first primary research. Okay, now. The name of this article, Calls to Destroy Egypt's Great Pyramids Begins. It blew me away. But when you study the history of Muslims invading Africa, you see this isn't the first time they destroyed African culture, African history. No offense to anybody who's a Muslim, I'm dealing with history, period. Okay? And just a couple weeks ago in Mali, you had Muslims that destroyed some of the holy shrines to the ancestors of African people there also. This is stuff going on right now, okay? So not only do Europeans know our history, but other people know our history also. That's why they're trying to erase it. That's why they're trying to destroy it. That's why in the mid-1800s, I'm going to get to this, I'm going to show you why these negative images were created of us. All right, now, I'm just going to share a little bit of this. I'm going to pass this article around to you. According to several reports in the Arabic media, prominent Muslim clerics have begun to call for the demolition of Egypt's Great Pyramid. Now you have three great pyramids. You have the pyramid of Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure. Okay? If you look at a picture and you see the Sphinx and you see a pyramid directly behind the Sphinx, okay, that's the pyramid of Khafre. Alright? You also have seven other pyramids, which are those of the queens. Those are smaller pyramids. Alright? Okay, now They've begun to call for the demolition of Egypt's great pyramids, or in the words of Saudi Sheikh Ali bin Said al-Arabi, those, quote, symbols of paganism, end quote, which Egypt's Salafi party has long planned to cover with wax. Most recently, Bahrain, Sheikh of Sunni Sheikhs, and President of National Unity, Abdel Latif al-Mahmoud, called on Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, to, quote, destroy the pyramid and accomplish what the Sahabi Amir bin al-As could not, end quote. This is a reference to the Muslim prophet Muhammad's companion, Amir bin al-As, and his Arabian tribesmen who invaded and conquered Egypt circa 641 AD. Under al-As and subsequent Muslim rule, many Egyptian antiquities were destroyed as relics of infidelity. See, this goes back thousands of years, well, hundreds of years, thousands of years. Okay? While most Western academics argue otherwise, according to early Muslim writers, the Great Library of Alexandria itself, deemed a repository of pagan knowledge contradicting the Quran, was destroyed under bin al-As reign and in compliance with the Caliph Omar's command. Okay, so check. So what they're doing is they're continuing what Arabs have done in Africa since they've been there. Destroy African history, African culture, African ways of life. Right. So now they have the technology. See, before they didn't have the technology to actually destroy it. It talks about how the Mamelukes shot off the nose of the Sphinx. Historically, it was attributed to Napoleon, but it's actually the Mamelukes who did that. Now they actually have the technology to actually destroy the Great Pyramid. See, what we have to understand is even though today they call themselves Egyptians, these are invaders. So this is not their culture. This is not their history. They don't care about it. Okay, so this is what we have to understand. All right, I'm going to pass this around. Check that out. That's from frontpage.com. That's just 4 days ago, July 10th. Okay, but I don't think you saw it on CNN, MSNBC, Channel 7, Channel 4, things like that. Reverend Al Sharpton didn't tell anybody, anything like that. You know, Jesse Jackson didn't say it. Jesse Jackson didn't say, you know, we got to save the pyramids, look what they done did, nothing like that. Okay, so this is why we have to go outside the circumference of their awareness and go to sources that they don't tell us about. All right, now, we have to understand that power, as Dr. Wade Noble tells us, power is the ability to define and shape reality and have other people accept your definition of reality just as your own. Okay? Power comes from the Latin word potere, meaning to be able. Power is the ability to define and shape reality and have other people accept your definition of reality as if it were their own. To understand, before I get to these images, to really understand these images, we have to understand what racism is and have a working knowledge of racism. On my show, on my Facebook page, I put together a little brief essay that is called A Brief History of Racism Defined. The reason why I did that is because oftentimes I would hear debates on the radio, because I listen to Reverend Al Sharpton's show. He does have some good information on there. A lot of that stuff, you know, I can leave behind. But he does have some good information. And I watch his TV show also, Politics Nation, as well. And I've never seen anybody kick a Republican's ass like Reverend Al Sharpton. Seriously, he's like a pit bull running behind. You know, personally, I don't know why they keep coming on the show.
Right.
Personally, but... But, you know, when it comes to other things, you know, I find him lacking. But I do give him credit on what he does do today. But what would happen is, a lot of our people are confused, and most people in America are confused about what racism is from a historical perspective. And I would see different debates, like Reverend Al Sharpton, I would see him on CNN, I would see Jesse Jackson, people like this, and they would talk about racism, but they would never define racism from a historical perspective, okay? And oftentimes what they will talk about as racism is actually bigotry, prejudice, discrimination, things of that nature. So, I saw a Facebook post on one of my friends' Facebook threads, and it was somebody caught this and was saying something was racist, and it clearly wasn't. They were clearly confused. So I asked them, I said, please define for me what racism is from a historical perspective. They couldn't do it. Now, if I'd have known this was a European I was talking to, I would have just let Brother Neff alone. I'm going to debate Europeans. I don't have time for that. But I put together this information, and he just couldn't refute it. So, racism from a historical perspective evolved over the 16th to 18th centuries. It was fueled by Columbus and other Europeans like Henry the Navigator exploring the so-called New World and Africa, extracting the wealth, human capital, and technology, and taking it back to various European countries to rebuild them because they were coming out of the Dark Ages. Also, you had the Portuguese being involved in the slave trade going back to about 1442 in the west coast of Africa also. Okay, Europe was land poor, people poor, and resource poor. They had lost somewhere between 25 to 75 million people in the 14th century due to the bubonic plague from 1347 to 1400. Okay. Some sources I've seen say they lost as many as 75 million. Some sources I see say they lost about 25 million, something like that. Okay. It became a race between various European countries to see who could extract the most wealth, rebuild their countries the fastest, and colonize the various countries and islands they were conquering. For example, between 1501 and 1700 AD, Spain took 4 million Africans out of Africa and enslaved them, exported them to Latin America to extract tons of gold and silver, which was then sent back to Spain and used to rebuild Spain and finance the military. Okay, now it's important for us to understand, slaves were not taken out of Africa. Africans were taken out of Africa and made slaves, okay, because being a slave is a conditioning process also. Once Europeans gained control of the wealth, Charles Darwin started to classify the human based upon how botanists had stratified plants and began classifying humans based upon features, places of origin, and who controlled the most wealth and power.
Okay, Moores, we're back. Now, we're going to talk about the economic side and payroll. When it comes to dealing with your family business, and we want to think about how we feel when we're on our jobs, and it's time to get paid for your efforts, and you want to make sure that the same way you expected to be paid on your job, you expect to be paid, you want to be paid. You want to get your check on time. You don't want somebody to come and say, well, we had a problem over here, and we're going to have to pay you tomorrow. Or you're going to have to go back, and you guys are going to have to come in and pick up your check tomorrow after 12 o'clock and all of this kind of stuff. So you want to make sure that you run your business like a well-oiled machine and make sure that everything is done on time and on a timely fashion, and you want to make sure that you handle your business. Just because it's a family member, we've been knowing each other all our life, you my son and you my daughter, you live out of town so you can wait, and all of this, we don't want to do any of those practices when it comes to the family business. We want to make sure that we be as professional with our families, and even more so in the family business, okay? And I just wanted to add that little piece in there because that is very, very important. We don't want to be lacking in any areas when it comes to family business. We want to open on time. If you plan on opening a store, whatever you plan on doing, you want to make sure that you set guidelines and rules and regulations to follow just as if you was working for somebody else. I mean, there's no reason in the world why, because it's my son or my daughter or somebody that we gotta we can be a little slack over here. We can be a little laxed over here. No, we don't handle our business that way. That's not the way to handle a family business. You want to handle that on time. Everything got to be on time. There has to be discipline. There has to be bookkeeping. Everything has to be done because we're talking about business. And it just so happened to be family. And so therefore, we want to make sure that the level of professionalism remains throughout the entire business. Okay? Also, I want to go over the part about the sustainability of the family. So we're talking about food, air, and water. We want to make sure that we have surplus. If you're running an in-home business, excuse me, we want to have a complete surplus of food available, a complete surplus of water available in the environment. We're growing our food. Want to stay on top of that as well. We can rotate, make sure that everybody is willing to participate in that. If everybody ain't willing to participate, we're going to have to set up guidelines and stuff to make sure that that gets done and go along and grows right along with the family business to the point that we have sustainability and there's enough that everybody can get some. Okay, so that's very, very important because we're going to have to get into the habit, and we should start doing this now, of growing our own food. That's just the bottom line. We're going to have to do this, and we cannot continue to rely on somebody else because we're talking about becoming self-sufficient, self-sustaining, and whatever it's going to take to make sure that's a reality. That's exactly what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to do that. We're going to have to start looking at that. We're going to start making plans for that and in order to get that that job done. That is the should be a priority. Okay? Now, bookkeeping. Very, very important. You're running a family business. You got to write it down. You always want to keep you. I recommend you get your family planner and make sure you have a new one every year, especially one that you can write things down in and target things and have your dates and the time and record your contacts and all of this stuff here in these books. So you're creating resources as you go along. And you're being resourceful and make sure everybody is aware of everything that's going on in the business. There shouldn't be any secrets in your business because it is a family business. In other words, I guess the bottom line of what I'm trying to tell you is just like in any other major company is structured, is the same way that you want to have your own structure in your family business. And everybody got to treat it with respect. Now, that's another thing that we have to deal with. Respect. You have to look at your business in the light of being respecting it as a business. We can't take anything for granted. We got to maintain respectability, professionalism, speed, accuracy, good bookkeeping. All of these things play a very integral part in your family business. You want to encourage other people's in the family's ideas and bring the ideas to the table. Take a look at it. Let's find out everybody's opinion on that part of what they got to contribute. You know, because everybody has their own brain and they have their own ideas and stuff. So we want to take a look at it. We don't want to take one family member and say, well, no, you don't never have a good idea. We don't want to hear anything you got to say. No, that's not the way you do it. You don't do it like that. Okay? All right. Now, we're moving now to the close of this broadcast, and I'm getting ready to do some very, very important things. We're going to be coming back later on in the week. We're going to be adding a ton of information to add to the library this evening. And so I'm going to do that, and we're going to cut it a little bit short this evening. And you guys stay tuned for our next broadcast that's coming up. We're going to be going back over to law, and just keep in mind what we discussed this evening or what we brought to you this evening about family. We want to consider that right now and start getting that done, okay? So ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you all being here this evening. And I've been your host, Haka Amana Elbe. See you all.